Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Boston's theater district now shines a little brighter thanks to a hard-to-miss addition, the 7,000-bulb marquee that illuminates the new Paramount Center on Washington Street. Emerson College did this restoration of the old Paramount Theater, and this weekend, the college's arts programming organization, Arts Emerson, starts its inaugural season of more than 17 different productions. Joining us to talk about Emerson's new productions and facilities is Robert Orchard, Emerson's first-ever executive director of the arts. Welcome to Radio Boston, Rob.
Thank you. It's terrific being here.
So this weekend, the Arts Emerson season debuts, and the center stage for much of that programming is the new Paramount Center. Many people may remember the Paramount Theater, an old movie theater.
Yes, it was an old movie theater that opened in 1933. Actually, it opened with a movie called Shanghai Express, which we're showing for free this weekend. It's still a terrific movie. But the center includes not only that original, the footprint of that original movie house, which was a state-of-the-art movie palace at the time, but also a building next door and new construction above and back. So it's a much larger facility than just the original Paramount Theater.
So what people may remember as having been the Paramount Theater is now folded into this larger complex.
Correct. And in the larger complex is a 600-seat proscenium theater with an orchestra pit for 40, a 170-seat screening room, state-of-the-art screening room, and a black box theater that has variable seating and capacity.
Also rehearsal studios, scene
shops.
It
has rehearsal studios, nine of them, a scene shop, a Hollywood soundstage, practice rooms. It goes on and on and on. It's actually, I get lost all the time.
Now, there's a lot of exciting arts renovation, restoration work going on in that area. The Paramount Center isn't far from the school's recently renovated Cutler Majestic Theater.
No, and it's the Cutler Majestic Theater, which was built in 1903 as a Beaux Arts opera house. And it took the college 11 years to fully restore it. It's an 1,100-seat proscenium house. And so the Cutler Majestic Theater, which is on Tremont Street, just a few blocks from the Paramount Center, links with the three facilities that I just mentioned in the Paramount Center that become the landscape for Arts Emerson and the public performances that we're providing beginning tomorrow.
This area, this downtown crossing area, of course, had been down on the heels for years. I think the Paramount Theater had become a porno movie theater at one point.
In its last days in 1976, it was distinguished by that. That is true.
So what you're doing seems to have the potential not only to revive the arts community, but to revive that pocket of downtown Boston.
Well, I think we're doing our part. There's no question. We exist at the Paramount Center with a common wall with the Opera House, which was recently restored, and the Ritz Condominium Towers, which is new construction, of which there are two that link to the Ritz Hotel. So the combination of Emerson College's commitment to moving from the Back Bay to that neighborhood, including not only the Paramount Center and the Cutler Majestic Theater, but also all the other facilities, academic and living facilities that the college has acquired and has made possible, along with the other elements of that community together, have really totally revitalized the neighborhood.
And this weekend is the big debut of the many offerings Arts Emerson will have.
It is. And do I sound calm, cool, and collected?
You sound excited. You know, we're not New York, obviously, but Boston does have a lot of art and theater and museums. Why should people be excited about this opening of Arts Emerson's
because new
season?
Because it's a totally new and different landscape for the community. Never in the history of the city have there been four facilities, much less two facilities, that were dedicated to bringing work from the rest of the world to the city. We have wonderful theaters in Boston, but for the most part, they're the homes of resident companies. So the work that goes on in those theaters is not surprisingly the work of those resident groups. Now we have, under the auspices of Arts Emerson, four theaters that are bringing the rest of the world here. So we're filling a void, really. There hasn't been the opportunity for people in Boston to see work from Ireland or from Paris or from Montreal or from Moscow or from Tokyo or wherever. I mean, we're going to be bringing work from all corners of the planet. And over the course of the next 3 or 4 years, you'll see a fairly solid representation of many, many different cultures and many, many different continents.
And do you think that Arts Emerson will be bringing performances that Boston would not have seen were it not for this new
venue? That's the point. That's the void that's being filled. It's not that there isn't an interest in this material. It's just there hasn't been a place in which to do it. Now there is. We have these magnificent facilities. And I felt strongly that with the gift from the college of these four theaters, it was important for me to program them with work that also added to the cultural opportunities in the community that amplified our choices culturally.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the performances that opened this weekend.
Sure.
One of them is that you'll be showing the production, The Laramie Project. Many people may remember this from Matthew Shepard, a gay man in Wyoming who was beaten, tied to a fence, and left to die in
Correct.
Laramie, Wyoming. The Laramie Project documented that. So in addition to that, there's a new piece called The Laramie Project 10 years later.
Right. The group of artists that went out under the Tectonic Theater Project and interviewed citizens, over 200 citizens in Laramie, Wyoming, right in the aftermath of the killing of Matthew Shepard in 1998. And they created this incredibly rich theatrical landscape about that incident and how that community responded to it in all of its complexity. And they went back 2 years ago under the expectation that it would do a short epilogue that would probably be part of the published version of it. And they interviewed many of the same people and dug into that community again as they had 10 years previously. And they found that the material that they got out of it was so rich that they created another full-length evening. So now we're going to do the premiere of the epilogue, which is the second part, and produce it along with the first part. So audiences will be able to see, for instance, in an afternoon, the first Laramie Project, the original Laramie Project, with many of the original artists that created it, and then have a break, and we have these dine and discuss opportunities for people to eat together, and we have facilitators coming in from various groups that are very influential in the area of tolerance and civil rights and civil liberties. And then an evening to see the epilogue. And what you get is an incredible lesson in history and how it evolves, and in human emotion, in denial, in taking something in and processing it deeply and making it part of your life, a whole range of reactions that community has had, including some revisionist history.
We actually have a clip from that epilogue performance from the production called The Laramie Project 10 years later. It's an interview with Laramie resident Dave O'Malley.
Kids were moving out of town. I mean, that was where I started realizing what a hate crime was, you know. I mean, people get killed in liquor store robberies all the time. I don't think twice about going in and buying a six-pack of beer. You know, but these kids were moving and dropping out of school. Not just kids, I mean adults too, you know, and leaving Laramie because of what happened to Matt. And that fear was, I started realizing, I mean, that's intense.
So what the original team has done is gone back to see how has the town changed politically, socially, religiously, educationally, and had it changed?
And psychologically, yes, indeed, it had changed profoundly. Obviously in different ways. Some people had changed their lives to the extent that they were dedicating the rest of their lives to ways in which they could open up the community to become more tolerant. And then there are people who are bitter about it and resent the fact that Laramie has taken a bad rap as a result of the murder of Matthew Shepard. So those are the extremes, as you can imagine, and everything in between.
Also interviewed was one of Matthew Shepard's convicted killers, Aaron McKinney. Quite an incredible interview to be able to get. We have a clip of Laramie Project actor and associate writer Greg Perotti describing that interview.
I would say at this point in Aaron's experience, he doesn't feel much remorse for what he did to Matthew. He has some remorse about other things. He feels bad that he was a disappointment to his father. He actually even said that he felt bad about depriving the parents, Judy and Dennis, of their son, you know. But he was not able to articulate an experience of remorse to me about what he did to Matthew.
So no regrets from Matthew Shepard's killer.
No, those two interviews are really chilling, no question. And the whole journey is one that will deeply affect you, I promise. You can't not be affected by it. It will be one of those productions that one sees in one's lifetime that you will always remember. I guarantee it.
Now, Rob Orchard, not all of the productions this weekend are as heavy as the Laramie Project, and the Laramie Project 10 years later will be. There's actually, on a much lighter note, a production opening this weekend, which is a reimagination of Rodger and Hammerstein's classic Sound of Music. This is called Fraulein Maria. It's got the Von Trapp kids dressed as hip-hop hoodie-wearing dancers. It's got cross-dressing nuns. We actually have a clip from that, and this is of Richard Rodgers of Rodgers and Hammerstein discussing the movie. This clip opens the production after watchers hear a live sing of Do Re Mi.
I think when you go to see the picture, you know whether it came from a sausage factory, and a great many of them do, or whether it came off the top of somebody's head and, as they say, an inspired piece of work. Somebody says, let's get these shots of Salzburg from the air, where nobody else has ever seen Salzburg before. And we build this and finally discover Julie Andrews in a meadow high above the town. And we'll come closer to her and closer, and she'll come running toward us. And by the time she reaches us and we recognize Julie Andrews, she owns us.
So that's Richard Rodgers' take. But why turn that into a gender-bending comedy?
Well, he's of course, describing a moment in the film that we all remember. And we all remember that film, and, of course, we all know the music. And Doug Elkins wanted to do a dance theater response to it, something very childlike. In fact, he wanted to do it for his kids, who were 9, I think, and 7 at the time. It started out at Joe's Pub in New York, and then it's morphed into larger spaces ever since. And it's just very witty and winning. It's almost as if a bunch of kids on a rainy day wound up in the rec room of one of their houses, and they discovered this vinyl flat black thing called a record, and they put it on, and it was the Sound of Music, and they started just to reenact it as kids, grabbing objects and costumes and anything they could find. It has that kind of spontaneous, childlike quality to it, and it makes you look at it in a different way, but it's just fun. If you don't smile at Fraulein Maria, you should be in therapy.
So this is the feel-good performance to
Absolutely.
See if you're going to see any one of them. Rob Orchard, as part of your job as Emerson's first ever executive director of the arts, you've also brought in a new music director, Dan Hirsch. Now, Dan Hirsch is somewhat known for bringing indie rock bands to the MFA, that sort of thing. So can we expect bands like Vampire Weekend and other indie bands to be playing?
I think the programming that we're doing in music, as well as Rebecca Myers, who's on as our curator for film, is going to follow the same challenge that we have on our stage, and that is to do work that likely wouldn't be seen or heard in the community. It's more difficult in music because this is a very rich music community, but Dan is going to do some very interesting programming that will link to what we're doing on stage when it's appropriate. Programming, again, from a variety of cultures, but mostly work that when you come to Emerson is a place where you can see this very specific genre of work and material that hasn't been available elsewhere in the community for a long time.
This new Paramount Center with all these performance venues is making up for a lot of rehearsal space and studio space that Emerson students never had. And I recently read an interview of one of your colleagues who said it's almost as if scientists suddenly got all the laboratory space they could possibly need.
It is truly a transformation, there's no question. I mean, I just arrived last October, so I'm kind of a new kid on the block. And I have to actually say to the students when I see them, that remind them that when they graduate, they may not likely be able to work in facilities quite this grand. So take full advantage of it. It's a wonderful gift to the students. A college is a college of arts and communication. So creativity is at its core. And now the faculty and the students, and indeed Arts Emerson, has the tools to do the best possible work. Because much of the programming that I'm doing in terms of public presentations is going to be coming out of multi-year associations with artists and institutions that I admire. So we're going to be facilitating the development of work as well as presenting work, inviting the community in to see the work as it's being developed, as well as obviously having the opportunity to partake of it when it's fully produced.
And with more than 100 performances of 17 different productions being offered over the course of this season alone, it sounds like this also has the potential to be a gift to people in Boston who want more arts.
No, it is. And it is a gift of more arts because, as I was saying earlier, it's mostly work that they wouldn't be able to see in Boston. My marketing people tell me that I have to say, and I'm getting used to it, that now you don't have to go to the airport. We're bringing the world here. And we are.
Rob Orchard, Emerson's first ever Executive Director of the Arts, thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
To learn more about these productions and to see the program for Arts Emerson's inaugural weekend, visit our website, wbur.org/Boston. The hills fill my heart with the sound of music. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. If you have something to say about our show, good stuff, bad stuff, compliments, criticisms, anything, you can call our listener line and leave a message at 617-353-1137. That's 617-353-1137. Or email us at radioboston@wbur.org. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.